many people have so much stress. It's so stressful. I have the feeling also with the stress, it's a kind of fear. It's not when you're not connected, it's a kind of fear. And what about you? Do you always feel connected? Or do you have sometimes a moment where you said, okay, where I am, where are you? I don't know, something like this?
Yeah, you know, I have those kind of moments all the time. You know, and it's a constant practice to bring myself back to center. And I give credit to my daily practice that really helps me to remain in my center. And then also just, you know, having people around me that are also doing a daily spiritual practice. You know, oftentimes my husband will just be like, don't take yourself so seriously. You know, what are you trying to be perfect for? Because, you know, I have this whole thing where I'm as, you know, sacred chant musician, and I should be perfect. I should be totally spiritually wise all the time and never make a blunder or mistake. And, you know, things happen. I'm not perfect and I do make mistakes. And I think the greatest freedom for me is realizing, okay, well, I don't have to be perfect. And there are times when I kind of come out of balance. And, you know, I think that concept of don't take yourself too seriously is really important. You know, it's like the high, if you put yourself up on a pedestal, you think, I'm so great, I'm so wonderful, I'm so spiritual today, I'm really doing such a good job. The higher you do that, then when something happens, then you have further to fall and it hurts. So, I found that it's best to remain humble. I work on that a lot, just remaining humble and in service as much as I can. And doing things with humility and service. You know, that you know, oh God, oh Guru, may this be of service. May this interview be of service. May this concert be of service. You know, everything may be of service. Instead of for a concert, you know, I don't want people to come and say, wow, she's such a good musician, or she's got such great vocals and her musicians are so amazing. I want people to come and say, wow, I feel more like myself. I feel something in my heart has shifted. I feel so. This is my goal that I'm very devoted to, and I have to continue to remind myself because I have a mind, I have desires, it's a daily practice. It's a moment to moment practice.
How about your school life? I know you went to India when you was 6 years old. It was your first time, but how was the life in this time?
Yes. I was always very much into my identity of being a Sikh up until the point when my father decided that he didn't want to be a Sikh anymore, and then I kind of questioned, but then I kind of came around, and then I really owned the path for myself, and I was very much into it. I found that you know, I was able to go to the Waldorf school for a good portion of my education, which was really foundational and helpful, I think, for me in terms of feeling confidence and feeling a sense of self-worth. And a sense of respect for others. So this was really, really important. And my husband and I send our daughter to a Waldorf school now. We feel that that's such a important thing. You know, Waldorf has so much to give in terms of self-worth for children. But then I also, at a certain point, because our family couldn't afford it, then I did actually go to public school, and also just the circumstances of our life. And by the time that I went to public high school, I was very strong in my identity as a Sikh, and I was meditating every day and doing my yoga every day. And it was interesting. I found that because I was so clear and so strong, that I was actually admired by the cheerleaders, by the football players, by all the other kids in their different cliques. I was considered like, wow, she's cool. Whereas just a couple years before in middle school, I had some doubt. I was not sure of myself. And then I got teased a lot, and felt energetically like kind of preyed upon by a couple of students. But then when I switched the energy around inside myself, and I became cool to myself that, you know, I'm a Sikh and I love this path, then I went to high school with that energy, and then I was like the coolest, you know.
Seeing that your father decided to leave the Sikh path, how was it for you? Was it challenging, or was it okay for you? What was the feeling with you?
It was challenging. You know, I grew up, my father was, you know, it was everything to me. I was very much admired him and loved him. And when he decided he didn't want to be a Sikh anymore, I was kind of went right along with him. But then I realized in that process that, no, I actually want to be a Sikh and I want this path. It took, at that point, our relationship and kind of got cut. I wasn't able to really connect with him in a loving way for many years after that. And it's even a little challenging at times, even now. But I'm very committed to, again, that concept of, I think I'd rather have peace in my life. I'd rather have a connection with my father than not. And so we continue to work on a relationship and continue to find love, even though it's challenging at times.
Yeah, sure. It's not always easy.
No.
That's life. I think that's life, that we have this things we need to learn, we can transform it, and that's why we are here, to
yes,
bring ourselves in unconditional love.
Yes.
Do you even listen to your songs?
No.
No.
I listen, you know, I you know, oftentimes I don't listen. And then, you know, after creating an album, maybe like 5 or 6 years later, then I'll listen and I was like, wow, that's cool. Because then it becomes just a part of my life. It's like looking back and seeing pictures of your family when they were younger. The music itself expresses so much of who I am. And oftentimes with the recorded music, I just need some space from it because there's so much energetically and emotionally, physically, spiritually that went into creating it, that I just often as an artist need to kind of step back and give some distance to it. So it's interesting, you know, my husband, he listens to my music all the time and he's really into it. But no, I don't. And I listen to other music.
Like hip hop or jazz?
Yeah. Not so much. I'm actually very much into, I really strongly believe that the vibrations that we listen to, that we're exposed to affect us. And I do feel that a lot. And there's not a lot of hip hop or jazz that to me has like a super positive message. There's some music that does, but I tend to really stay within the spiritual music genre, you know, with like David Premal, and I love Ajit, I love Niranjan Kaur, Jai Jagdish, I love, there's a new album that's that I'm singing on, actually. This one I can listen to a lot. And it's called Mountain of Smoke. It's an album that's all in English, and it's by Liv Tarsing. It's being released this Friday officially. And that album I'm so in love with. I could listen to that over and over again. So that's just to kind of give you an idea. I do love, you know, I do love music, and I love listening to things to kind of get more ideas and expansion. But I have to be honest with you. I listen to very, very little in that world because I do feel that it's important to have positive vibrations coming into your being. And there's just not a whole lot, yeah, you know, from that genre.
Yeah, that's true. Also, with hip hop, I don't think so. There's DJ, how is it called? DJ Yogi?
Mm-hmm. MC Yogi. Yeah, he's awesome. I love him. Yeah, I should check him out more. I really love him. I had a really positive experience with him some years back, and I just started following him on Instagram. So I think that, yeah. I'll check him out some more.
Yes, and you have also an album with your mother.
It's, yes,
I think it's about birthing. There's also this song Putamata Kia Sis. It's so beautiful. I love it so much. So you chatted with your mother.
Yes, my mother. You know, people ask me, well, who taught you how to sing kirtan? And I'd say, you know, I have two teachers. One was my mother, and one was Yogi Bhajan. I feel like Yogi Bhajan gave me the energetics of it. My mother gave me the love for it. I grew up listening to her sing, and many of the songs that she sang, the shabads, the sacred songs, I learned and began to sing also to my daughter. And this one in particular, Putamata Kia Sis, it's on an album that we made together that specifically for mothers, it has chants that can help a woman through the process of becoming pregnant through conception and childbirth, and then through the experience of motherhood. And fatherhood too. These are important prayers for the father to chant and sing as well.
Do you think that mantras can have negative effects? Or can you do something wrong I know sometimes people say it's very important to have a right intonation of a mantra, and sometimes the people say, okay, try it, and then it will be right.
I think that it's important with mantras to have correct pronunciation. Mm-hmm. I feel that this is really helpful. The mantras of the Kundalini Yoga tradition come from the language of Guru Mukhi. Mm-hmm. And this kind of really makes all the difference. It's like if you are practicing yoga and somebody says, put your arms up at 60 degrees and do breath of fire, they're giving you a particular posture, and then the energy flows because you're holding that posture. Well, the same goes with pronunciation, that if you're having the correct pronunciation, the energy just flows more. Now, of course, it's all kind of a mixture of everything, because if you have great pronunciation but your mind is elsewhere, then forget it, then there's no benefit to that. Or if you have terrible pronunciation but you have all the devotion, then there's a lot of benefit there. But if you have great pronunciation and devotion, then you have like the best in both worlds, and you can really increase the amount of bliss that you're having. That's my experience. So I feel that that's key, is to learn the original language, because the mantras themselves have a particular rhythm and sound. And once people are empowered with this, then they're able to have a deeper experience. So if you don't have the opportunity to learn the language yourself, then you can at least learn from somebody who has good pronunciation. and that's, you know, I listed all the artists that I like to listen to generally have good pronunciation that I mentioned before. My mother has wonderful pronunciation. So you don't necessarily have to learn the language as long as you're getting the correct pronunciation. So, I think mantras can never have a negative effect. I think our mind, it's the mind. Anybody who says that, you know, a mantra is dangerous, it's just like way too much mental stuff going on for that person. You know, Kundalini yoga is dangerous. Like that, they're not practicing the Kundalini yoga that I know. It's about finding your inner flow, finding your way to your kindness, to your love. It's about feeling better about yourself. It's very simple. So anybody who kind of goes to somewhere else with it is, in my opinion, too much in their mind.
So it's also, if you chant the mantra wrong, like in wrong words, it's also not dangerous.
No, definitely not. I think what becomes dangerous, just in the sense of disrespect to the soul, is when people begin to kind of sexualize the presentation of mantras. Not that there's anything wrong with sex. There's not. It's a sacred act in and of itself. But in the presentation in a public forum, the sexualization of mantras and everything, I feel that becomes dangerous only in the sense that the mantras lose their power, and potency and effect, and then this kind of expression of mantra spreads because can become like a teaching moment, and somebody takes that up and says, well, this is how I'm gonna do the mantras too, and I'm gonna act this way with them, and that's where the danger is, I think, is because then the actual potency of the mantra, the sacredness of it, gets lost.
How important is a regular repetition of a mantra?
It's very important. It takes a lot of time for mantras to settle in. I feel that, doing a 40-day practice of a mantra is really important. Ideally, we're just chanting these mantras all the time. And the way that that's possible is by having a really strong daily practice where you chant, and then it's just vibrating within your nose and your cheeks and your body. That's the purpose of daily practice. So you can go about your work and do your work, be on the phone, but still the mantra is vibrating within you. So this is important. And then taking time to do particular intensive practices like white tantric yoga or the German yoga festival or Kundalini yoga festival, where you're just chanting all day long and cleansing it out. Very important and key for maintaining a sense of self within our stressful world, and kind of, immersing yourself in a mantra is really super key. So I find that, I do my daily practice, but then I also have mantras playing in my kitchen, playing in the background, and try to come back to the mantra. Like after this phone call, I'm going to take a few minutes and just, come back and chant a little bit just to keep connected.
Do you know, like individual letters, how do they have a meaning? Like you see, you have love in Germany, it's like Liebe, it's light, or Allah with this L or something. Do they have a meaning?
I do feel that different sounds, different languages have an energy to them. There are certainly, in yogic terms, in Kundalini yoga, there are specific syllables, like sa is the generation of life, ta is the experience of life, na is death, ma is rebirth, and all of the sounds that have to do with mother energy. I find that are very powerful. Sometimes we just chant ma. but I don't spend so much time going into the meanings, but more spending time with the feeling. I feel that that's important to remain in our feeling state, in our heart state.
How important is the language of a mantra? Because you have Gurmukhi, you have Sanskrit, it could be German or English.
I know with the Gurmukhi language that it's a specific language to produce healing through the combinations of the sounds. And it was specifically designed and delivered for that purpose. It's kind of like a medicinal language in a certain sense. I find that all languages have beautiful aspects to them. And sometimes it's important to sing something in someone's own language, an affirmation or something. And I know that Yogi Bhajan created affirmations, certainly in English and not just mantras. But I do feel that, you know, mantras are basically a projection of the mind into truth and light and love and the essence of self.
What's most fascinating for me is your angelic voice. And there's something happened. I see it with other people that are crying. What happens there?
I can only say that I feel that it's my my sadhana practice, my meditation practice, and tuning into, you know, the guru, the energy of guru, Shabad Guru, the you know, that's really all that I can say is that my singing comes from the spiritual practice. It's and there's really nothing more to it than that. The spiritual practice, the intention of that is to connect with the universal presence of God in all beings, and that's what I sing to. And I have the gift of guru from the Sikh tradition, that guides me to that universal consciousness without fail. That teaches me, that chisels my ego, and gives me all the opportunities to connect with that universal consciousness. So any connection with that is really guru's grace.
You have a wonderful book. I have that since years.
Yes.
Alive. I got it from a really good friend from America. I met him in India, and we did a teacher training with Gurmukh there. And he also wrote, "Nadine, we keep up with each other and we are kept up," and some other words. And it's a very, very beautiful book. And there's one story in it about a soldier who came from Iraq, and he had a big trauma, and he couldn't cry. But then I think his wife had the Ramadasa, this chant, and he cried a lot about it. And what do you think, which power has like healing mantra, healing circles, what is the power behind that?
It's these, you know, very essential sounds. Ra is the energy of the sun. Ma is the moon. Da is earth. Sa, infinity. Sa, say, so, hung unto infinity. In every cell and fiber, let there be healing. And these syllables have an incredible power to them, that somebody even just listening can have a healing experience with them. I think it's also our intention in creating the music. The intention with the recording, it was to heal and create this vibration of healing for people. But above and beyond all of that is the essence of, again, the guru, the essence of sound current as teacher coming through. And I strongly feel and believe that the energy of guru is what I'm serving with every recording, with every time that I sit my bottom down to play the harmonium, that's serving the guru. And I feel that that's why the energy comes through the recordings, is that that's the energy of the guru coming through and healing people. But it starts off with a belief. I think that many people just choose not to believe. They choose not to have faith, and they discard the possibility of miracle. And I choose to believe. I choose to have faith that the guru is working through my music, and is there for everyone who listens.
We talked about before that we can finish with a mantra, with a small mantra. What do you think about? Yes.
Yes. Yeah, let's do this Sat Narayan.
Oh, yes.
Sat Narayan Wahe Guru Hari Narayan Satanam.
That's
a beautiful. So, yeah, Sat is the energy of truth. Narayan is so many things. Narayan is this energy of God that manifests in many, many ways, in courage, in flow, in love. So then we'll chant Sat Narayan Wahe Guru. That's the mantra of transformation. And then Hari, the seed of the divine, Narayan, that divine energy, Satanam becomes the identity. So I hope to share this in Germany, this mantra, with people. And it's also on my album, The Beloved Album, that people can listen to as well. So here we go. I'll start singing. And how long do you think we should go for?
Only a short one.
Okay, all right. We'll do short. Okay, all right.
All right. So, go for it.
Yeah, 2.5 hours later, right?
3 minutes, something like that. I don't know.
Okay, sounds good. All right. Satanarayan Wahe Guru Hari Narayan Satanam 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 Satanarayan Wahe Guru Hari Narayan Satanam
Thank you so, so much.
Thank you. Thank you for all your good questions.
Yeah.
And good energy.
Yeah, thanks so, so much. I really appreciate it.
Satnam.
War das ein tolles Interview mit Snatam Kaur. Es hat in mir so viel mehr Frieden und Hingabe ans Leben gebracht und ja, wow, es kam ja vor einigen Wochen der Impuls, dass ich das jetzt bald bringen werde und dann kam die Reihenfolge, ohne dass ich dieses Interview vorher angehört habe. Also es lag wirklich lange, lange in meinem Ordner und dann kam plötzlich dieser Impuls und ja, das Leben zeigt, diese Impulse, denen solltest du immer wieder vertrauen, denn das ist dein Seelenimpuls. Das kommt tief aus oder von weit oben, wie auch immer du es siehst, her. Und die Intuition, die wird immer das Richtige für dich entscheiden. Und apropos Intuition, falls deine Intuition dir schon mitgeteilt hat, dass du mit nach Island möchtest, nach Reykjavik und Island erkunden möchtest, im Dezember, da gibt es das Manifest Your Dreams Island Retreat bzw. Intuitive Retreat, dann kann ich dir empfehlen. Bis zum 31. Juli ist noch Frühbucherrabatt und da kannst du noch einiges sparen. Ansonsten geht es im November nach Marrakesch. Dann gibt es im November noch ein Rebirthing-Retreat mit Kundalini-Yoga und mit Sound-Healing. Und du wirst hundertprozentig auch Mantras von Snatam Kaur hören. Und es gibt Aufstellungstage online und ja, noch viel mehr. Schau einfach auf meiner Website vorbei. Am 8.8. wird nicht nur das Thema der Kinderwunscherfüllung kommen, sondern auch am 8.8. Es ist Lionsgate Portal und dazu wird es ein Special geben. Schau einfach auf meiner Website nach und ich freue mich auf alle, die mit dabei sind und eintauchen in diesen wundervollen, besonderen Tag. Namaste und Satnam, deine Nadine.